A Benson Diary by John Murphy. And we start with Shakespeare's sonnet, number 18. Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Thou art more lovely and more temperate. Rough winds do shake the darling buds of May, and summer's lease hath all too short a date. Sometime too hot the eye of heaven shines, and often is his gold complexion dimmed. And every fair from fair sometime declines, by chance or nature's changing course untrimmed. Rough winds have played their part, shaking May's darling bud this year. Seldom do I recall a colder start to May. The apple blossom came late. It still gloriously crowns our crab apple. Whether there will be fruit, I cannot say. It is by Bob's corner that I catch the succulent scent of lilac year to year, and suddenly summer smiles. The lilac blossom topples over the fine old garden wall, and often with our dogs pulling me their own ways, I always stop to draw the soft, sweet lilac to catch the scent that promises the sweetness of an English summer. If white snowdrops and yellow daffodils are spring's sentinels, and if tulips her colourfully uniformed infantry, then spring's triumph comes garlanded with victory's purple in its many etiolated hues and paler shades, from blue violet of wild flowers in woods to the coyer paler purples of violets and violas along the shaded glades, to the amaranthine shades of ceanothus and purple-sprouting broccoli, and the dizzying arrays of mauve wisteria and lilac blossom, spiky lavender and peppery pinks. Late spring owns a violaceous palate. It is not the only floral note this year. Am I alone in noticing primroses flowering far longer than in recent times? In our garden, the rhododendron and azalea are normally already in flower by Maytime. But time runs cold this year, and so everything runs later. I have not even put in the bedding plants yet. Too cold for them, and far too cold for us to be out in it. The birds are made of tougher stuff than us mere mortals. Red-breasted robins open the dawn chorus most mornings, followed quickly by the blackbirds, and then the full symphony of cacophonous birdsong. We have four nests about the church, which means later in the year we will need to clear our gutters. They leave their white splatters as their calling cards about the nest sites. They bespatter the cars as well, hitting the mark, if not aiming to please. For me, May brings nostalgia, as heady as any perfumed lilac. My school days in Maidenhead and later in Reading are relit in memory's magic moonlight. Back then, although we all knew about May dances and maypoles and going a-maying, those English customs were ghosts at the banquet of summer term. Sometimes a maypole was put up for some summer fete, but it never really amounted to anything more than a curiosity. Instead, in May, on damp mornings or languid afternoons, serried ranks of classes came together to prepare for sports day in June. Mr. Hartigan, who perhaps was already in his late 60s, appeared sporting vest and high-waisted pale trousers with a military tie for a belt. An old gramophone was put on the trimmed lawn, and speakers were fixed to it by the physics and maths masters working in tandem with long coils of wire. Other teachers, all smoking cigarettes, were dotted along the pale cream veranda, silhouettes of the lost idyll of some summer long ago, whilst music hissed and crackled over the lawns, where serried ranks of boys gleamed in white T-shirts and white shorts and freshly whitened plimsolls. In the mid-60s, it all belonged to another age, as did the various exercises which were meant to harmonise with various compositions of Johann Strauss II. As boys would, we played up on the beat of the waltz, often led astray by the bolder boys of fourth and fifth forms. By the time I reached 16, those sports days were like blossom blown into gullies of the past. The other prize of summer terms were extra holidays. We got a half day off school on the holy days like Ascension, and other great feasts that peppered the months of May, June and early July. Our many extra holidays were the envy of other schools about in Reading. Whilst we rush home, they were left to construe Livy's wars, endlessly waged that long eternity to 4 o'clock. When I see about the village the blossom and the lilac and the horse chestnut pyramids, pink and cream, piling high into the sky, all I believed forgotten somehow seems alive. And although those summer days were only lived for a youthful moment, their memory has endured a lifetime's wear and tear. Perhaps, like the smile of the Cheshire Cat, they will not fade until the very end. And continuing with the Shakespeare sonnet, "But thy eternal summer shall not fade, nor lose possession of that fair thou owest, nor shall death brag thou wanderest in his shade, when in eternal lines to time thou growest. So long as men can breathe, or eyes can see, so long lives this, and this gives life to thee."